deal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and criminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition. Well,
one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Thursday, May 3rd, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for today's show. We got all sorts of news, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more to get to you today. We can't wait to get to it. We'll start by introducing from our virtual studio our senior news editor, Cannabis Carrie, in Astoria, Oregon. How are you doing, Carrie?
Thank you, Russ. I'm doing great out here today.
Oh, yeah. It is raining pretty severe down here in Portland. I took Roscoe out for a walk at noon. We came back soaked. I imagine it must have been the same up there in Astoria.
I actually had the same experience. I wasn't actually walking your dog, but a different dog, and came back soaked as well. That's how it goes sometimes out here in the spring.
Yeah, we love it. April showers.
And the summer and the fall and the winter.
Yeah, April showers bring May showers when you're here
that's
in
right.
Oregon. Carrie's got our headlines right after this first break. So what do we have in the news today?
I do. We have some news from Montana where one of our activists, one of our people is up there. Also, I've got some news coming out of New Hampshire. And our own Wiz Khalifa got busted again for weed. Oh, I'm sorry. It's a different famous person. I'll catch you up with that in the hemp headlines.
All right. I'm also going to take a look at a new post that's out on Time Magazine that kind of confirms some of my Box Canyon theory. And also a little personal plea on K2 and the need to legalize the real thing. Then also... Also in our studio today, we've got the pirate is here, Ganja John. How you doing, John?
What up, Russ?
I'm just chilling and putting together our last show before I take off to Dallas.
Yeah.
Heading out for Cinco de Mota.
You never get off planes.
I know. Texas loves me this year.
Yeah, they do.
I don't really know what it is. But John brings us our Groovin' Thursday tunes, and what do we got for today?
Red Man and with Sour Diesel. Thanks to Rio out there in the chat for... bringing this song to my attention.
Oh, really cool. Now, is that something we're going to add on for Ganja John show tonight, or?
Probably, yeah.
Right on. Good stuff coming up later tonight. 8 o'clock Pacific time, Ganja John show live here at Rolla J Studios. And then also on today's show, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to our Hollywood hemptress, Terry Joyce. She is... touring through the Pacific Northwest right now. She's in Washington State just across the river. She's going to tell us a little bit about what she notices and the differences between the north part of the West Coast and the south part of the West Coast. And then at the end of the show, I'm going to bring you some more science from the Patients Out of Time conference. Dr. Amanda Ryman, who's also a master of social work, gave an excellent presentation on cannabis as an exit drug. You know how they always say it's a gateway drug to hard drugs? Well, she shows some evidence from patients that it is a way for them to exit hard drugs, a way for them to kill the cravings and the addiction withdrawal syndrome. So we'll talk about that and more. Plus, take your calls an hour or two at Toker Talk Radio at 971-533-7111.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Weedmaps.com. I'm Radical Russ from Normal. My job as outreach coordinator, I travel every month, and when I'm on the road, I need a fast, accurate way to find the medical marijuana dispensaries in the area. So I turn to weedmaps.com. Weedmaps.com has the best dispensary locator online or on your mobile device. Search by zip code or let Weedmaps find you, and in seconds, you'll have the addresses, phone numbers, and customer service reviews for the medical marijuana dispensaries in the local area. WeedMaps.com also has a section devoted to helping you find a doctor who understands and recommends medical marijuana under your state's law. You can even check prices on the Medical Marijuana Stock Exchange. Coming soon, you'll even be able to find the listings of normal attorneys and chapters, local head shops and grow shops, and the best weed-friendly businesses. WeedMaps.com has the information you need to be an informed cannabis consumer. Visit WeedMaps.com today, a proud sponsor of the Normal Network. Inhaling deeply of
the sacred smoke. Russ Belville. Yeah, he's a scurvy dog.
The Global Marijuana March is an annual free rally held at different locations across the planet. It refers to cannabis-related events that occur on the first Saturday in May or thereabouts and may include marches, meetings, rallies, raves, concerts, festivals, and information tables, depending on the city. Here in Dallas this year, since the big day falls on Cinco de Mayo, we're calling ours Cinco de Mota, Festival and March. Sure, Mota is Latin American Spanish slang for weed, but the name acknowledges more than just Cinco de Mayo. The name is also a grim acknowledgement from our community of the more than 50,000 Mexican lives that have been lost since President Felipe Calderon launched a massive military crackdown against the cartels in 2006. Texans want to see an end to the drug war and the violence associated with marijuana prohibition across the world. Join us as we celebrate for legalization and the rights of all adults to consume cannabis responsibly. We'll have food trucks, speakers, live music, vendors, fire spinners, prizes, and of course, the march. The plan is to build a party around the march, to turn it into a legalization celebration at Dallas City Hall. The party starts at 2. The march is at 4:20. Help us promote the event by clicking the like button below.
Industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Medical marijuana advocate for Montana pleaded guilty today to a conspiracy to maintain a drug-involved premise. Tom Daubert made his plea this morning in front of a U.S. Magistrate Jeremiah Lynch of the U.S. District Court. Daubert, who is 59 years old, was the author of the 2004 voter initiative to legalize medical marijuana in the state of Montana. For his involvement in his drug crime, that was owning a property with a medical marijuana grow, he was facing up to 20 years in prison and up to a $500,000 fine. Now, going into court today, he knew what the fine would be if he pled guilty. Prosecutors and defense lawyers have been working on a plea agreement. Under that agreement, he will pay a total fine of $50,000. What we don't know is how long he will have to remain locked up for that guilty plea. They could not reach an agreement, so we do not know what a possible prison sentence will be until Judge Dana Christensen sentences him, which has now been set for September 6th by Judge Lynch. Lynch explained to Daubert today that Judge Christensen could give him a lengthier sentence than recommended by federal prosecutors, to which Daubert asked, but he could also go lower, when the magistrate said that by law he was obligated to outline the worst case scenarios. Daubert responded that he was a bit more interested in the others. Daubert is facing charges after his business, along with several other medical marijuana businesses, were raided in coordinated statewide raids in March of 2011. His former business associates are also facing similar charges.
Yeah, and my apologies, Carrie, for not proofing before. It's Tom Daubert is the man's name, and he's been a guest on our show two or three times in the past, doing a lot of work with Montana Patients and Families United, and you won't find a more sincere or dedicated activist. You know, it's really so frustrating in these cases. I mean, we spoke with Steve D'Angelo yesterday, and he talked about how everyone they're busting seems to be like the honor roll of medical marijuana, and, you know, Tom Daubert is right up there on that honor roll. Meanwhile, you got guys like, well, I don't want to name names and stuff like that, but you got other people, other actors in the medical marijuana industry who are flagrantly, you know, violating what the rules are set out in various medical marijuana statutes. Those guys never seem to get the attacks. It's always the ones that are trying to do it the right way, the ones that are trying to follow what confusing regulations have been put into statute. They're the ones that the feds want to take down because they want to show that they're not going to allow any sort of commerce to exist. They're not going to allow any sort of organized, politically structured, well-financed opposition to the drug war stand. They're fine with the patients using it. They're fine with the caregivers growing it, just so long as it stays small, as long as it stays personal. Anytime it starts to intrude on their turf, like any good drug dealers, they're going to back up Big Pharma's turf, and they're going to go after the people who have the best chance of being their competitors. This has to stop, and the only way it ever stops is by fighting for full legalization for all of us.
My apologies to Dobert. I blame Colbert. Anyway, we win some, we lose some. The New Hampshire State Senate has rejected a bill that would have decriminalized small amounts of marijuana in the state. Currently in New Hampshire, marijuana possession of any amount is a misdemeanor and punishable with up to a year in jail and a $2,000 fine. The bill would have changed the law to decriminalize a person's first two marijuana possession charges of less than half an ounce. Under House Bill 1526, the first offense of possession of less than 14 grams of marijuana would be a $250 fine, and the second offense of that less than half an ounce would be a $500 fine. Any additional marijuana possession charges would have been changed to a possible year in jail and a $1,000 fine. Now, any offenders under 21 would have also been ordered to complete a drug awareness program. The bill narrowly passed the House in March by a 162 to 161 vote. There was much debate during that vote. At the same time, they were also voting on a legalization and regulation bill, which they overwhelmingly killed 228 to 89. Now, Governor John Lynch had promised to veto both measures at that time. The Senate has now saved him the trouble. A Senate committee that looked over the bill had recommended that the Senate kill the bill, and without any debate before the bill, it was voted down. I don't have the actual vote counts. They haven't updated their page yet, but it will not become a law this year. Claire Ebell, the executive director of the New Hampshire Civil Liberties Union, commented yesterday that the current law is not proportionate to the crime, and that the effect of marijuana convictions, particularly on young people, includes the inability to be employed in most government agencies, join the military, or get student loans.
You know, what is up with the New England states? It's hard for me to try to figure this out. And maybe it's just because, you know, I've always lived in the West where, you know, Carrie and I would road trip across the length of New England just to go to a casino. I mean, it seems weird to me that you have Vermont on one side that has medical marijuana, and you have Maine on the other side that has medical marijuana and decriminalization. You got Massachusetts nearby that has recently decriminalized marijuana. You got Rhode Island nearby that has medical marijuana. I just don't understand what's the difference in New Hampshire. I mean, obviously, aside from the politics. I mean, how is it the sky hasn't fallen in Vermont or Maine or Rhode Island or Massachusetts? We see no terrible stories in the news about, you know, how awful it is that they're not busting all the potheads they see. And yet in New Hampshire, they can't see that. They want to continue to bust potheads in a place where the motto of the state is live free or die.
That is ironic. Rapper Wiz Khalifa, whose real name, again, is also nice, Cameron Jibril Tamaz, was arrested a second time in the last 2 weeks for marijuana possession. The rapper was performing at the Joel Coliseum Annex in North Carolina. Now, he was also arrested a few weeks ago in Nashville, Tennessee, where he was playing a concert. He was busted then with 3.7 grams of marijuana, and both Khalifa and a friend were arrested on a possession charge. They are scheduled to appear in court there sometime before May 14th. This time around, officers went to the effort of getting a search warrant after local police that were patrolling the parking lot said they could smell burning marijuana. Officers searched the tour bus and found paraphernalia along with 11.39 grams of marijuana. Wiz Khalifa and several members of his band were cited and released, but now must appear in court on July 27th to answer to the charges. Now, we are hoping that Wiz Khalifa has more luck. We know he doesn't want to have to perform without cannabis, but he is playing the next three nights back in Tennessee, two nights in Memphis, and then Birmingham, Alabama. If he can stay out of jail this weekend, he'll be playing in Athens, Ohio, and Baltimore, Maryland next weekend before heading to Dubai, where he plays on the 25th and the 26th. Now, looking through my news archives, I found this gem from a few years back. A British man was arrested in the Dubai airport for having a speck of marijuana that was smaller than a grain of sugar stuck to one of his shoes. Keith Brown, a 19-year-old at the time, was given a mandatory 4-year sentence. His family fought for his flight to return home, and he was eventually sent home after about a year in jail. And I also had a story from 2009 of a South African man who was found with 2 marijuana seeds, apparently, because he had no idea how they got in his bags. It could have been wild hemp seeds, but they were found in this man's bag. And even though he was found not guilty, he had to spend 4 long months in a Dubai jail awaiting the trial that would find him innocent. Now, Dubai is a police state. They have a zero tolerance policy for soft drugs, and it's reported that they have as many plainclothes officers as they have uniformed officers there. Mere possession is punishable by up to 4 years, and they have life terms and even a death sentence for cultivating and distributing. So, if you are even suspected of being a drug dealer in Dubai, you will be given a high priority as a threat. If they think you have weed and they can't find any, they can administer a drug test and you will be given a warning, but still put on probation there for testing positive. There are numerous stories of people doing year-long jail sentences for marijuana that report they never even had a trial. And I know you might be tempted to bring it in. A quick web search of world cannabis prices told me that it cost $50 a gram in Dubai for low-grade swaggy weed, but they still told you where any tourist could find it. So now I've gotten off track a little bit here, but Wiz Khalifa, why Dubai? So if he makes it out of Dubai, you can catch him back in Kansas City, Missouri, where he will play the dance Festopia on June 2nd. Tickets are still available. You can get those online.
You remember the movie Ray, the great show, Jamie Foxx playing Ray Charles?
And there absolutely.
There was that scene where Ray Charles refused to play in the South. Was it Georgia, I think it was, because of the segregation? You know, his band ended up going in the back or something. Mm-hmm. Refused to play in the South. I call on Wiz Khalifa and any of these artists to start refusing to play these places that continue to bust pot smokers, especially high-profile pot smokers like this. You know, I mean, it might be a little much to ask Willie Nelson not to play in Texas. I understand that. But, you know, we can certainly boycott Dubai. We can certainly boycott Malaysia, Singapore, any of these places where they still have these most draconian, torturous sentences for marijuana users in their countries. If the entertainers start standing up against this, maybe we get somewhere on it.
What did the Dubai listeners think Wiz Khalifa's talking about when he's talking about roll one, smoke one, we get high if we want to? Is that just a fantasy world?
No. Like I said, there is a community of stoners there. We've covered it again and again in Indonesia, where your head can literally get lopped off for having an ounce of weed. There's still ounces of weed floating around.
Yeah.
And in Dubai, I looked up some. I was tripping through the web and looking up some of their culture, and they say, oh, if you can get a Pakistani friend, you know, it's pretty easy. If you've got a friend that can go back and forth through Pakistan, you know, they have all of these rules, and they also have a couple of parks where any tourist can go and try to score, and they tell you kind of how to not get ripped off. But there's also a cannabis community there, and obviously they like rap music.
Yeah, just like to paraphrase Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park, stoners will find a way.
That's right.
All right. Thanks, Carrie, for the news. I want to comment on a story that I saw in Time magazine. A fantastic story here about, well, I don't know if it's fantastic, but it's a op-ed called What is President Obama's Problem with Medical Marijuana? And I just wanted to quote to you a few paragraphs from this because I think it confirms what I've been saying about this Box Canyon theory of medical marijuana, that they're trying to stall us until they can get the pharmaceuticals out. This is from Time. Over the last few weeks, I have talked with nearly a dozen people in the medical marijuana business, 3 U.S. attorneys, White House officials, and local officials who oppose the federal crackdown, for a story that will appear in this week's newsstand issue of Time. The answer on the ground, predictably, is far more complicated than either medical marijuana advocates or the Obama administration is willing to describe. And it all comes down to this. Despite Obama's promises during the 2008 campaign, federal prosecutors have lost faith in the ability of state and local officials to control a booming commercial industry for a drug that is still illegal to grow, possess, or sell under federal law. Furthermore, the fact that state laws clash with federal laws in the medical marijuana states make it all but impossible for state and federal law enforcement to work together cooperatively. So the nation is left with the uneasy status quo. The federal government is not trying to eliminate medical marijuana altogether, but it has decided it cannot stand for the commercialization or large-scale production of marijuana for the stated purpose of helping the sick, even when that production is technically within the bounds of state law. And here's the kicker. Obama has shown little interest in elevating the issue. Some in federal law enforcement and at the Office of National Drug Control Policy hope that the advent of new pharmaceutical replacements for grown medical marijuana, like the Canadian drug Sativex, will make the entire issue moot in the coming decade. It's Box Canyon 101. Pressure the states to limit to medical marijuana to dispensaries only. Fast track Sativex and cannabis pharmaceuticals through FDA approval. Replace all the dispensary marijuana with cannabis pharmaceuticals. And then respond to the patient's complaints with, well, you guys are the ones that wanted medical marijuana. Here it is. Medical, dose, regulated, guaranteed, barcoded.
Hey, Russ, what do you think about a break?
I think it's the perfect time for a break.
Yeah, I'm taking a break from the chat room.
I understand how that goes. Be right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
Tune in to the Normal Network for Irie Wednesday, featuring the best of reggae, ska, calypso, Latin, and Hawaiian toker tunes, with premiere episodes every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, and replays at 12 a.m. and 6 a.m. on the Normal Network and online at tunes.normal.org. In 1972, Normal filed the first federal lawsuit to recognize the medical benefits of marijuana, leading a DEA judge to admit that marijuana is the safest therapeutically active substance known to man. Since then, Normal activists have fought for every medical marijuana law on the books today. Normal attorneys have helped draft and defend medical marijuana laws all across America. Normal's library of polls, statistics, laws, and research on medical marijuana is second to none. But at Normal, we recognize that medical marijuana laws can't possibly help every deserving patient, and that medical marijuana is but one step in the evolution of true freedom for all marijuana consumers. Normal, defending all marijuana consumers since 1970, no matter why they choose to consume marijuana.
Hey, this is Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger Seeds, TGAGenetics.com, and you're listening to Normal Show Live.
It's time for your daily toker tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune.
All right, John, you know, between the reggae artists and the rap artists and their misspellings and alternate spellings and rhythm and all that kind of stuff, I can't keep it track. And this next song, I've seen three different damn spellings of it. So.
I've seen three, and I think I told you a fourth.
What the hell, man?
So I'm going to just call it Sour Diesel because it's a strain, damn it. Redman was in Denver while we were at the Cup, and I don't know if he showed up to the Cup, but, you know, he filmed something while he was there, and it was a freestyle about weed that they eventually produced the freestyle and made it into a video, and you can check out that tune now, Sour Diesel, recorded in Denver, Colorado.
All right. This is Redman with Sour Diesel, the music video. Check it out.
Killer House. Let's go. I smoke curve to the haze, smoke haze to the cheese, smoke cheese to the kush, smoke kush to the sour diesel, and I ain't feeling anything. When I roll a bomb, my code name Cheech. Hash burns all in my car seats. I was a baby boy like Therese, hitting the L before Rock the Bells release. Mr. Green, yeah, that's me. Got the knockout bud, the Muhammad Ali. Lungs of Bob Marley when I speak. Po-po, I hide the bud in the briefs. The highest of highs, your boy's on fire. Smoking with me is like trying to get him to the creek. 420, I light up the key. I'm a whiz at getting the currency in the streets. Bill Clinton said he hit weed in his speech. I smoke sour every day of the week, nigga. Preach. I smoke curb to the haze. Smoke haze to the cheese. Smoke cheese to the kush. Smoke kush to the sour diesel. And I ain't feeling anything. When I roll a bomb, alright, it's killer how.
Let's go.
I smoke with you.
Okay.
Breathe it in, all in your system. Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah.
Gilla House. Blunt filled with Kush cheese, purple and sour diesel. I call that smoking reefer. I keep weed in my system, and truth be told, I get higher than Blake Griffin. And just imagine what I'm sipping. To drink this, you're gonna need a prescription. So it better be high grade if you're selling me. And never start no cipher without telling me. Cup empty, I need a refill. Something to chase this E-pill. I hit my dealer at 3 a.m. I wonder if he got hash still. This Gilla House, what I'm reppin'. I stay high, get fly, I'm a Jetson. Now I'm on my high horse like a Western. And I never leave the house without protection. That's something that the pastor can't preach. But that's something that a jail could teach. To get high, we put our money on weed. And we probably spend it all, cause the sour ain't cheap. Chief.
I smoke perv to the haze. Smoke haze to the cheese. Smoke cheese to the kush. Smoke kush to the sour diesel. And I ain't feeling anything. When I roll a bomb, alright, it's killer how. It's killer how. It's killer.
Offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215. Or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Wiz Khalifa's wallet and cell phone are missing. Again. And Taco Bell's already been searched. We got to look somewhere else. Cannabinoids and health.
Cannabinoids.
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 Why am I having trouble saying that?
Cannabinoids.
Jeez.
Cannabinoids.
What a gift. Flame on, flame on if you can. You're looking for the dope. Ooh,
Weed.
That's Hooey Valley, Hooey Ha.
Weed.
Where any office boy or young.
It's time for a return to the epicenter of American cannabis culture. With our guest, you know her from season one of NBC's Last Comic Standing. It's the Hollywood Hemptress herself, Terry Joyce.
All right, the Hollywood Hemptress is on the move. She's right up here in the great Pacific Northwest. Terry, how you doing?
I'm doing really good. Actually, I am in Richland, Washington. I'm performing at Joker's tonight here in town, and actually just got into my hotel room, but I've been up in the Northwest for like a couple of weeks now, nearly, and it's I love it up here.
Yeah.
But it's been interesting. It's definitely been interesting to travel through and perform, in areas of Montana, and to kind of get a feeling of how the crowds are responding to the subject matter of marijuana, and even like things like the Occupy movement and stuff. And I have to say, I got a little bit of a negative backlash.
Really?
Yeah, especially when I started to talk about the Occupy movement. There were some people in Butte that go, "We're not hippies," and they accused me of being a hippie, and I was frankly rather shocked.
A hippie?
Yeah, I mean, I said, okay, well, you know what? I'm a hippie and you're a cowboy. I love you and you love me. And at the end of the day, we're one humanity. And I don't know where that came from. And then they all applauded and bought me shots of tequila afterwards. So, which was really weird is that it was so hippie of me to say that to
them. How beautiful. But if it gets you free shots, hey, what the hell?
Yeah, I don't really need free shots.
That's not on the list, huh?
Right. Neither tequila or vaccines. I'm sorry. I'll pass. Give me some cannabis, all right?
Right on. So how has the cannabis been for you as you've gone up through the Pacific Northwest and Montana?
Well, of course, you know, Oregon has the best.
Of course.
Oregon is definitely the best. I love it. I love it there. It's funny. Your job laws are a little bit different here. I noticed that you're working on getting also dispensaries actually implemented into Oregon. But I actually, because I just recently moved and the area that I'm at had, because, you know, I'm building the website and advertising and stuff like this and relocating, I thought, well, you know, maybe it might be cool to kind of just have like a little spot to work at. And there was this brewing company that's hiring locally. And I went through this great, great interview. And then at the very end of it, she said, "So what is your radio show about?" And, you know, and I, because, you know, I do Hollywood Hemptress Hour and also that spot here. And I thought, okay, well, here we go. And I said, well, it's for the legalization of cannabis. And I almost feel that I almost lost my, I'm not sure if now I'm going to get the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was, you know, she sort of described how, you know, they're in the beer business. And, you know, and I said, look, you know, I wouldn't discuss this at work. I mean, knowing that, you know, I'm being respectful for that. But there was definitely a negative feeling towards, you know, legalizing marijuana. Her argument was that, you know, even when they had a legitimate stand to want it to be legal and realizing that it is patient rights, she criticized that the appearance of the people who actually like showed up was stereotypically a turnoff for people that were part of her demographic.
Right. In other words, dirty, stinky hippies. Didn't like the look of the people.
Same issue.
Yeah.
I thought I moved to Oregon so I could be a hippie and be free. What is going on here?
Nope. Not in my house.
That's the thing is, you know, people will get this this idea of Oregon being, you know, hippy-dippy liberal granola paradise.
It is.
But really, that's Portland and Eugene.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the rest of it. It's not the rest of it.
Definitely.
And not even really Portland. It's more Eugene. Like, if I go down to Eugene, I get annoyed. It's so hippie.
It's
like, in Portland, I can deal with it because the hippies are peppered in with hipsters and all kinds of other things. I like my buffet of ridiculousness.
There we go. Yeah, it's great that you're up here in the Pacific Northwest. Now, what are your plans as far as sticking around?
Well, you know, I'm basically waiting to find out. I did apply and stayed at a place. So I'm waiting to see if my application gets approved. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, then I'll be moving in over the next week or so. And, you know, just looking for more stand-up work and also, you know, again, getting back to doing some live broadcasts. I have a Hollywood Hempress Hour Ustream channel now.
Oh, great.
Which I'm wanting to talk to you about all the mechanics of all that.
Okay.
And get that running and kind of, you know, be visible as opposed to just a voice.
Right on. Well, that's fantastic. And yeah, we'll help you any way we can. And of course, Hollywood Hempress Hour is here every Thursday. We got you at 7 o'clock Pacific. So what's your latest episode?
Well, my latest episode is actually, I did bring Lynette Shaw was back on show again, mainly because I wanted to like give a whole arc to her story. You know, she definitely has like now lost her club and the IRS did come after her and just kind of like to pick up like what that was like for her and where she's at now in terms of what she's going to do with her life. Mm. Yeah.
That's a shame. She ran the Marin Alliance for Medical Marijuana. Wasn't that like the oldest dispensary in California or something like that?
It was like the longest standing dispensary in Marin County.
Oh, Marin County. Okay.
Yeah. I really have to check on the actual facts to see who the longest running dispensary was. That would be an interesting trivia.
Yeah, I think you'd be going back to Cannabis Buyers Club, Dennis Perone, and those guys probably.
Yeah, it seems like that sounds right.
Yeah, I think you're right there. All right, so Terry, of course, going to be up here in the Pacific Northwest. We'll get you in studio in a couple weeks, I hope.
I'm there. I'd love to be there.
Fantastic. And we'll line up more guests and just have more discussions here. Although can we continue to call it the Hollywood Hempress Hour?
I don't know. I mean, like, I've always had a Hollywood Hempress Hour. I'm more like, do I change the name now to just Hempress Hour? Uh-huh. I mean, you know, I'm still connected to Southern California and will definitely be active with California activism, you know, because I also will be living, my intent is to, I have to still work down in Los Angeles, so I will be coming like back and forth. It will be just like now I'll be in Oregon too, so I guess I can still say Hollywood Hempress Hour.
All right. Well, we look forward to having you here in the studio, and it's always fun talking to you. Terry Joyce, who's now in Richland, Washington, performing tonight at Joker's. Richland. Where's Richland, by the way?
Richland is like near the Tri-Cities.
Oh, okay. Pasco, Kennewick, and Richland. Right.
It's where they made the, like, I don't know, some participation in the bomb. I'm just afraid to drink the water that I might go and something while I'm here. I'm not sure. I'm not supposed to joke like that on stage, but I can hear, you know, like, don't mention anything about the bomb.
That's one of Joker's main rules. Don't talk about meth and don't talk about Hanford Nuclear Power Plant.
That's funny. Well, Terry, we will see you again in a couple of weeks. Thanks for joining us, babe. Right back with Dr. Amanda
Ryan. You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Have you ever wondered how to make the best tasting and most potent pot brownies possible? Do you consistently seek out recipes that will elevate your marijuana-infused cuisine to the highest levels imaginable? Then it's time to pick up a copy of the official High Times Cannabis Cookbook, published by the world's most trusted name when it comes to getting stoned. Packed tight with more than 50 recipes for eyery appetizers, munchy meals, high holidays, stoner sweets, and cannabis cocktails, along with expert advice that demystifies the experience of infusing marijuana into butter, alcohol, and various oils. This book will get you cooking with grass in no time, with special treats inspired by Willie Nelson, Snoop Dogg, and Cheech and Chong, plus all the info you need to stay safe when making and consuming edibles. You will truly learn how to bake a ganja cake and eat it too. So look for the official High Times Cannabis Cookbook wherever finer books.
Normal, unlike any other marijuana or drug reform organization, is built from the ground up by grassroots activists. We are the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, and we aren't just anti-prohibition, we're pro-marijuana. Every week, we take some time to talk to the citizens of local Normal chapters across the country and around the world, as well as others who are working to make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. In this segment, we call Grassroots Activism.
All right, folks, last weekend I was fortunate to be able to bring to you the Patients Out of Time Conference from Tucson, Arizona, the National Conference on Clinical Cannabis Therapeutics. And one of the presentations there really struck me, and that was Dr. Amanda Ryman. She's a Master of Social Work, and she's been studying this at Berkeley Patients Group and other places. And this is entitled Cannabis as an Exit Drug, which is the idea of getting off of hard drugs through the use of medical marijuana. I'll turn you over to Dr. Ryman.
Thank you very much. I am absolutely thrilled to be here. This is one of my favorite conferences to present at. And I really wanted to thank Greg for that amazing presentation before this one, because I think it's going to put into context a lot of what I've been finding in my studies with human beings using cannabis as a substitute for other drugs. And specifically today, what I'm talking about is cannabis as an exit drug. So we are very familiar with the gateway theory, and now we're learning more about how individuals are using cannabis to move out of the addictions that they have found with other substances. So that's what I'm going to be talking about today, looking at the use of cannabis as an exit drug, treatment versus substitute. So first, I want to give a little bit of a context. You know, right now in the cannabis industry and in the movement, we are experiencing a bit of a mixed message. We do have this umbrella of therapeutic, but then underneath that, we're seeing two camps emerging. One that's talking about cannabis more as a recreational wellness model, a nutritional dietary supplement, as you will, and another group that's talking about it more as an actual cure for various disease states. And so what this does for the public, at least, and for those individuals that are in society trying to find answers to their medical questions, is that it sends a bit of a mixed message. And then on top of this, we have, of course, the Schedule I barrier, which prevents us from doing research with human beings with whole plant medicine. And then we also have this moral, philosophical viewpoint of deontology, where the belief is that the behavior of ingesting illicit substances is bad, regardless of the consequences. So this ends up with drug policies that treat all illicit drugs as if the consequences of their use is the same, even though we know that is not true. So this has also stifled this conversation about how to move forward and apply cannabis in a clinical setting with human beings. So we're seeing this continuum of cannabis. On one side, we have wellness, and on one side, we have cure. And what I'm going to talk about today is that in the context of drug addiction treatment, we are seeing individuals utilize both ends of these continuums in order to treat their addiction and to reduce their use of other substances. Something else we're seeing is that dispensaries are kind of in the middle of all of this. Because there is not a lot of education for MDs around how to talk about cannabis in clinical practice, you see a lot of individuals coming to dispensaries asking questions about clinical applications, asking questions about different conditions that cannabis might be used for and how they can choose the correct medicine for them. So dispensaries are put in the position of almost being that catalyst of healthcare services. So they also really need to know how cannabis can be utilized in this way so that they can give better information to their patients. On the wellness side, we have things like the raw plant, life enhancement, natural remedies, and maintaining balance in the body. And on the curative side, which we've heard a lot about at this conference, we have the endocannabinoid system, we have research on receptor activity, curative properties of cannabinoids, but also, in the end, maintaining balance. And when we look at why patients use medical cannabis, we see that very naturally, their behavior is covering both ends of the spectrum. So this is data from 200 randomly selected charts from Medican. So these are individuals that were coming to renew their medical cannabis recommendations in California. 68.9% of them were using cannabis as a substitute for prescription drugs. 81.1% report cannabis as being very effective, and 22.8% said that they needed to use more cannabis over time. But of those, almost 86% were able to reduce their cannabis use when they wanted to. So this is how we're kind of seeing the patient population utilizing cannabis. And in terms of why they're using it, this shouldn't be anything new. We've seen a lot of research supporting that the most popular reasons for patients using, at least in the state of California, are pain relief, sleep, relaxation, and a prescription drug substitute. These may be thought of in more of the natural remedy wellness end of the cannabis spectrum. But then you also see things like anti-diarrhea, anti-itching, preventing seizure, preventing involuntary movement. And this speaks a lot more towards the curative model. We're talking about the impact of taking in cannabinoids on the signaling in the endocannabinoid system. So what I want to present today is this idea of cannabis as a treatment for addiction. So, you know, kind of given this context that there are these mixed messages kind of under this auspice of Schedule I and deontology, and given that the medical cannabis patient population is already utilizing cannabis both to treat symptoms of an illness but also to treat the illness itself, it stands to reason that we can apply this model to various clinical applications such as addiction. So in this model, we're really looking at a holistic health model, a combination of wellness, biology, and complementary and alternative medicine. So when we talk about wellness, we're talking about substitution, we're talking about the mind-body connection, and we're talking about harm reduction, ways to encourage a mind-body connection so that individuals have more of a control over their own behaviors. When we talk about complementary and alternative medicine, we're talking about introducing techniques such as massage, acupuncture, chiropractic care, meditation, and other herbs into this treatment as well. And then finally, on the biological side, you have things that we've been hearing more about at this conference, such as Greg was mentioning, the ability of cannabinoids to block receptors in the brain, responsible for sending signals for craving. And then again, you have dispensaries there in the middle. Now, one of the amazing things about many dispensaries is that they've already adopted this model. At Berkeley Patients Group, for example, we offer massage and chiropractic and acupuncture free of charge for our patients. Other dispensaries have meditation programs. They do bring research in to patients so that they can learn about the endocannabinoid system and the different functions that it has. And they have harm reduction classes and harm reduction education for patients as well. So we're seeing this model being exhibited in dispensaries, which makes it an amazing venue for studying the use of cannabis as a treatment for addiction. So the study that I'm going to be speaking on today is actually hot off the presses, you could say. I just analyzed these results last week, and I'm really excited to be bringing them to you today. So there's a dispensary in San Francisco called Spark. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal dispensary. In addition to having a wide variety of medicines and cannabis-infused products for their patients, they have a whole host of alternative health classes and programs free of charge, such as Chinese herbal medicine consultations, massage, acupuncture. They work with local harm reduction centers in San Francisco. So it's a really good example of an institution that's able to bring this model together. So I helped them conduct a study. They have been offering meditation for some time now, taught by this wonderful woman who's a Buddhist monk, in conjunction with a Chinese herbal alternative medicine center in San Francisco. And they wanted to know if this program was doing anything. You know, they had patients come and do the meditation, and afterwards they would say, oh, I feel great, and that was wonderful. But they wanted to know, is it really doing anything for these individuals in terms of changing their behavior? So we decided to design a study. We recruited 8 medical cannabis patients from a local harm reduction center who are actively using methamphetamine and participating in harm reduction. There were 6 men and 2 women. Of the 8, 5 were active meth users at intake, and 3 of them were former meth users at intake. They participated in 6 one-hour meditation sessions that were led by this Buddhist monk and were compensated with 2 grams of cannabis per week from the dispensary. They were all qualified patients, and they were able to choose whether they wanted to get indica, sativa, or 1 gram of each. Then what we did is we administered a standardized scale of mindfulness and drug craving at baseline and before and after each meditation session, which lasted an hour. And we also asked them to keep daily logs of whether they meditated that day and also whether they used alcohol that day, cannabis that day, or methamphetamine that day. Now, it is self-report, and we didn't really go into detail with the amount of drugs they were using because a lot of these individuals are fairly transient, and we wanted to make it as easy as possible for them to report on their behaviors during the week when they were not seeing us or having services. And so these are the results. So first, we conducted baseline interviews with all of the participants to ask them about their drug and alcohol history, especially their history of cannabis and methamphetamine use, and their history of meditation. And it's interesting, you know, listening to Greg's talk, because when we talk about this idea of relapse, when I was interviewing these individuals, of the eight, every single one of them relayed to me the same thing. And that's when I asked them if they had used cannabis previously to try to stop or reduce their use of methamphetamine. As they were explaining that phenomenon in their own lives, each one of them reported the same thing. When it's late, and I've been up for several days using methamphetamine, and I know I should go to sleep, and I know I shouldn't go back out and use more meth, but something in my head is telling me to go out and use more meth, if I smoke a joint, that voice goes away, and I'm able to go to sleep. And I'm able to ignore this craving to go use meth, and then I wake up the next day and I feel better. And each one of them said that. And I think that that really speaks to the potential of cannabis to help prevent relapse right in a moment of craving. So that was something really interesting that came up in the baseline interviews. We did a regression analysis to look at the relationship between total days spent meditating, total days spent using cannabis, and reductions in craving scores, increase in mindfulness scores from week 1 to week 6. And days spent meditating did significantly predict a reduction in craving and an increase in mindfulness from week 1 to week 6. Cannabis use was on its way to being significant. Again, this is a small sample, but we definitely did see that those that were using cannabis did enjoy an increase in mindfulness and a decrease in craving. Most participants used cannabis daily. So we had 8 participants. In a given week, most of them were using cannabis 5, 6, 7 days a week. However, during the study, their amounts of alcohol and methamphetamine use remained extremely low. So again, going back to Greg's talk and thinking about this idea of the gateway theory, and does the frequent use of one substance, such as cannabis, lead to the frequent use of other substances, such as alcohol and methamphetamine? And what we're seeing here is that no. That these individuals were maintaining very high levels of cannabis use, but were able to maintain reduced use of alcohol and methamphetamine. So one patient in particular that I wanted to point out, because it's a really remarkable case, he was a 43-year-old male that was using alcohol, cannabis, nicotine, and methamphetamine at the start of the study. Throughout the 6 weeks, he had consistent reductions in craving and consistent increases in mindfulness. He meditated 6 to 7 days per week throughout the study. Drinking days per week ranged from 0 to 3 days per week, and meth using days per week ranged from 0 to 1, and he used cannabis every day. So I think that this is a good example of a more successful case where an individual was able to maintain high levels of cannabis, bring mindfulness into their practice, and enjoy reduced levels of the substances that they were trying to avoid. So what are some implications from a study like this? Again, it's an extremely small sample. It's self-report. We didn't do blood tests on them. We don't know for sure if what they were telling us was the truth. But these were individuals that were very highly engaged in their own treatment. These are individuals that were visiting harm reduction centers on a very frequent basis, that were coming into the dispensary on a very frequent basis. And so what we're seeing is that a combination of cannabis and mindfulness practice might be effective at reducing the use of other substances such as alcohol and methamphetamine, and that there seems to be a dose-response relationship, and that the more someone was meditating, the more they were enjoying the reductions in craving and the increase in mindfulness. That cannabis assists in the reduction of other substances both through brain signaling and behavioral substitution. So just as individuals were talking about the ability of cannabis to quiet the addictive voice that was telling them to go on and use more methamphetamine, they also spoke about the ability of cannabis to help them sleep, to reduce anxiety, to take the edge off withdrawals associated with methamphetamine use. And as an aside, the ability of cannabis to take the edge off withdrawals also really helps in reducing the risk of relapse, because many times individuals will relapse because the withdrawals get too intense. So we're talking about that mechanism, and then we're also talking about a psychoactive substitute. You know, individuals that are seeking to alter their brain chemistry, individuals that are seeking to alter their perceptions, who have found that the substances they were using in the past were causing multiple harms in their lives, and find that they can get that same satisfaction from a substance that isn't causing harm in their lives. So again, in this model, we're really seeing these two different types of cannabis use emerge. We're seeing the brain signaling model, and we're also seeing kind of the palliative well-being quality of life model as well. We also see that it is possible for those wishing to reduce or stop their drug use to utilize cannabis frequently while reducing or eliminating the use of other substances. One of the issues that a lot of patients have come to me with is that they want to go to NA or AA. And so they go because it's great, it's everywhere, you can always find a meeting, and it's free. That's one of the reasons it's the most widely utilized addiction treatment program there is. But they go in and everyone's talking and it comes out that they're a medical cannabis patient and that's it. All of a sudden, you know, goodbye, come back when you're sober, you know, we don't want to deal with someone that's in denial. And so it can be really difficult for them to convince people that, no, you know, I am clean from the substance I was having such a problem with. This is my medicine. This is what I'm using to stay clean. And so that stigma is still out there where it's difficult for that to be accepted in the traditional treatment world, which is why you are seeing more and more dispensaries having harm reduction and substance use programs held actually in the dispensary, so that individuals that are attending already know that that part of their treatment is going to be accepted by those who are providing treatment for them. So the conclusions. The Schedule I status of cannabis use and the deontological framework of drug policies are barriers to discovering the full range of therapeutic benefits. And we talk about the Schedule I status a lot, but I really want us to talk more about this moral philosophical framework of deontology, because I think it's something that's embraced by drug education, such as DARE. I know for myself, when I got out of a DARE program, I thought that crack, methamphetamine, pot were all the same, and they were all gonna do the same thing to me. And that's because the focus was on the behavior. The behavior is bad regardless of the consequences. So I would really like to see this come more in our conversations about why we're having trouble moving past this idea of prohibition to actually talking about a more realistic public health-based regulation of drugs in the U.S. That the active components of cannabis have promise for treating addiction via the body's messaging system, so more as a treatment. I would love to see a severe alcoholic go into the hospital for detox and be given an IV drip with cannabinoids in it to help prevent seizure and to make them feel better. It makes sense to me. So we can work on that after the conference. The palliative effects of cannabis can assist in reducing cravings and the chance for relapse while providing a safer psychoactive substitution. So here we're talking more about that wellness model, about keeping the body in balance by introducing cannabinoids into the system instead of other substances. And that dispensaries can act as a nexus for the provision of both types of cannabis therapy. So I want to briefly mention a study that was just published, I believe, last week in the Harm Reduction Journal that was co-authored by myself and Jennifer Janicek from Harborside Health Center, where she surveyed 303 patients from Harborside Health Center and found that 40% want more information on harm reduction and 20% would participate in harm reduction and other therapeutic groups if they were offered. So there is a huge opportunity here to really help individuals that have not found satisfaction with traditional substance abuse programs, to invite them into the medical cannabis world, and to help provide that holistic health model that seems to be working for those individuals that engage in the use of cannabis as a treatment for addiction. So I want to say again, thank you so much. This is my email. I want to mention that the slides in your book are not the exact same slides as I presented because I didn't have all the results yet. So if you want the slides I just presented, just email me and I'm more than happy to give those to you. So thank you and enjoy the rest of the conference.
That's Amanda Ryman from the Patients Out of Time conference in Tucson, Arizona. Cannabis is an exit drug. You can get that video, the audio recording of it is pretty much what you want, out there at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/normalnet. In fact, almost all the presentations, I missed three of them because of technical issues, but almost all of them are up there. 14 or 15 different videos. Great stuff. All the cannabis science you can shake a stick at. All right, we're going to head on to hour two, where we're going to talk a little bit about the origins of Mexican marijuana prohibition and other topics. Also, a little word about normal and bowling. We might talk about bowling. This will be cool.
Awesome.
And, yeah, so stay tuned for Hour 2 Toker Talk Radio. We'll also take your calls at 971-533-7111. For Cannabis Carrie and Ganja John and Wiz Calico, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers. And don't forget, I'll be out of town, so no live shows tomorrow. I'm heading to Dallas for Cinco de Mota. See you there. DFWNormal.org.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it all one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
You're listening to the Normal Network, where the